Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, back to Steiny and Guru on 95.7 The Game.
Yeah. All right, Evan Giddings in for Guru today, and having a little fun talking about foul ball etiquette. And so I like the story from the college kid who took the who got a foul ball and then took it down to San Jose State and hit it and said it was more juiced. I got a story like that too from the great Rocky Colavito.
R.I.P.
So he had a lot of he obviously had a baseball collection of a lot of his home runs. So
oh, he's one of those guys.
They give it to
sorry, just
so anyway, you know, he had a lot of balls laying around.
He had like 400 home runs.
That's right.
How many did he keep?
Well, like the 100th, the 200th, the 300th, okay, the 400th. Right. He would keep like the 42nd home run the year he led the league in homers. Anyway, it was back in the live ball era. It was back, I think, let's say about 2007 or 8 or after that. Rocky took he took one of his balls, like his 100th home run ball, which would have been from like 1958, and he, you know, cut it open. And then he cut open a ball from 2018. The balls from 1955 and 60, if you'll remember, they were string. There was this little ball in the middle, very little ball, yeah, the little rubber ball. And then there was twine, 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 twine. Anyway, he said he unwraps all the twine, gets to the ball in a 50 ball, throws it on the ground, it doesn't bounce. It's like a marble.
The one from 1958.
Correct. Yeah. And the one from 2007 was like a super ball. Just some food for thought.
Well, they are more juice now. I mean, they're made differently.
Anyway, there's
still. Especially the ones in like 2000, like a guy I was talking about before the break, 2018, 2019. Good Lord.
Yeah.
He had a pop-up that could go out.
Let's go to Brian's in San Jose. What's up, Brian? How are you?
Morning, gentlemen.
Hey.
How you doing?
Doing well. What do you got?
What's up, B?
I just wanted to jump in on this foul ball topic, man. It got my attention going.
All right.
So probably mid-70s, I want to say. I went to a Giants game with my dad. I wasn't a Giants fan at the time. I was an A's fan. But he managed to catch a foul ball. And like you were saying earlier, the goal was to get it signed. So we went down to the players' parking lot after the game. Actually got Mike Schmidt to sign the ball. It was actually his foul ball. But to the contrary, went to an A's game about a week ago with my lady, and the amount of dads that I saw send their kids down to the bullpen to get balls, and the kids are looking back like they're about ready to get their teeth drilled, want nothing to do with it, and then run back with the ball to the dad. It was kind of comical because the kids apparently didn't want anything to do with what they were being sent down for.
Right.
Ultimately, the dad wanted the ball.
Mm, I got you. Thanks, Brian. Appreciate the call. So they send the kid down to get the ball for the dad.
Yeah,
kids have no idea what's going on.
That's too much. I mean, you got to let kids be kids. If they want to go down and try and get a ball, then you give them, like, a lot of times you can go to a bullpen and you can trade stuff. Like, a lot of players, if you're seeing them down there, one of the easiest places to do it in Seattle, in a T-Mobile Park, whatever it's called now, the bullpen is right underneath the left field bleachers. So if you kind of dangle, I don't know, a kid will, like, trade them a piece of gum or something, or I've seen a friend, like give him, like, a chicken tender for a ball. That kind of stuff is fun.
Right.
It can't be for the parent.
Like, I remember doing that as a kid. You go down to the bullpen, and you could usually get those guys' attention. You know, the bullpen catcher usually didn't have an ego big enough that he wouldn't talk to you. And, you know, I almost remember saying, can I get a ball? And they would be like, well, we'll see. Oh, maybe, maybe not. Like, they keep it going for a while, you know. Anyway, Steve in Santa Rosa. What's going on, man?
Yeah, this story, this is my all-time favorite baseball story. Total magic. when I was a kid, I was at a Giants game with my parents, and a foul ball came in. I called it. It was coming right to me. I called it, and this man stood up right in front of me, tried to get it, and dropped it. So I was fuming mad. So 30 years later, I'm at an A's game. Johnny LeMaster's up, last game he played. Hits a foul ball straight up. I watch the ball off the bat. I go, I'm laughing because it's coming right to me. I didn't move an inch. Stuck my hand up, went right in my hand. I caught it. So, you know, I didn't realize that there was a kid next to me with a glove, you know. So when I saw afterwards, I was like, well, he's getting it, but I'm going to make him work for it a little bit. You know, so everybody looked at it and everything, and it made the rounds and all that. And the kid was just so dejected, you know, I could see it. I was like, man, this kid, he has no idea, you know. So I start talking to him, and I go, hey, he's got his glove on. I go, let me see your glove. And he stuck it out, you know, palm down. And I go, no, no, the pocket. Let me see the pocket. And he turns it around, and I stuck the ball in the pocket, and I go, that's yours. That kid, the look in his face, I can still see it. Absolutely never been that high in my life. That kid was so happy. You know, and his dad looked at me and gave me the thumbs up. And then nice. I ended up chatting with him the rest of the game. He played first base. I played first base. That was, I'm telling you, give the kid the ball, and, you know, especially if the kid's a baseball player. I don't know if that kid could have caught it. It was pretty hot, but, you know, just the look in his face and the happiness he had, unmatched.
Yeah, good story. Appreciate it. Appreciate it, Steve.
That's what it's about.
That's, don't put me on the side of that I don't like touching moments.
No, but you don't like stuff being given out just because, you know. Yeah, you're not a participation trophy guy. And people probably put me in that category, and that's fine.
Tebow's in Santa Rosa. What's up, Tebow?
Hey, what's up, guys? How's it going? I'm coming from the other side. I have a 5- and 11-year-old kid. Both play sports. I got a foul ball at a Giants game. After 5 minutes, they didn't care where the hell that ball was. I'm not saying that's every kid, but to think that every kid who receives a foul ball, his life is going to be touched forever, and oh my God, this moment, I don't think that's the case.
No, I don't either. I think it's about a moment.
They're going to the iPhone. They're going to the PS5. They're going to the Nintendo Switch. That ball is going to be put to the side, and chances are mom and or dad are going to cherish the ball more than the kid getting the ball. Have you guys talked to 5- and 11-year-olds? Have you guys communicated with them? They have no attention span. Come on, guys. What are we doing?
No, that I agree with. Thanks, Tebow.
The kids like the ball. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. They like the ball. Are they in love for the rest of their lives and now love the Giants and the game of baseball for the rest of their 50 to 80 years of life? I'm going to say no.
Well said. Thanks, Tebow. Appreciate it.
Well, then why do you get them Christmas gifts? I mean, they're just going to forget about it in 3 minutes. That's, oh, no. Are you
what?
Are you not big on Christmas?
No. You're talking about a stereotype that's out there. You know, kids get a Christmas gift, and by New Year's, they're done playing with it.
Well, most of them are.
Well, yeah. I'm not.
Some of them don't even enjoy the gifts they get.
I don't have a judgment.
But I just think it's kind of the equivalent. Like, you still get kids Christmas gifts, even though they may not appreciate them.
Yes.
It's about the gesture.
No, it's I like Christmas. Christmas is fine.
Did you have a tough Christmas 1 year?
Yeah, I did. What's your point?
What?
I told you.
What happened?
Let's see. I think I used to number my presents.
Really?
Yeah, so I knew the order that I would open them. So I put like 1 through 12 on, or, you know, 1 through 12, because, you know, I get a 3-pack of socks, and I'd get 3 presents. 1 pair of socks, another pair of socks, and then a third wrapped pair of socks.
And then a telescope from Toys R Us.
It was a microscope.
Same thing.
All right. Got a little basketball we can talk about today.
Let's do it.
Monty Poole reporting that basically everybody's anticipating that Kuminga is going to take the qualifying offer at some point before October 1st. We're 3 weeks away. Cam Thomas has taken the qualifying offer. Josh Giddey got a four-year, $100 million contract. I think the difference between Giddey and Kuminga, although I'm not 1,000% sure, but I just have to get the sense, Giddey was willing to go back to Chicago. Doesn't seem like he didn't like it there. And it doesn't feel to me like Kuminga wants to come back to Golden State, long term anyway.
It's going to make for a really exciting start to the season, I think. I mean, so if he's in... There was a report also that some of the players are beginning to funnel their way back to Golden State, right? And I do think that part of it is this, they just want clarity. Because Al Horford, D'Anthony Melton, and Gary Payton II are the three players that are ostensibly waiting in the wings.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
For this thing to wrap up. So maybe there was some pressure. I'm not sure, but training camp's like 3 weeks away. I mean, that's the other part about this, too. Like, the basketball season is quickly approaching, and the Warriors still have not made a move yet.
Well, and the interesting thing is training camp starts on the 29th of September. The deadline's October 1st for Kuminga. So if he, in theory, waits till the first, then they're going to have to, it's not the end of the world, but then if they do have Horford, he's not practicing that first day. You know what I mean? They can't do anything until Kuminga signs on some dotted line. And if he waits till the first, then, you know, the Warriors still have to deal with telling Horford, Melton, and Payton, you know, we've got to, wait till the first.
Are you surprised to hear that he's anticipated to sign the qualifying offer?
You know, it's funny. It's one of those things where I wouldn't have been shocked by anything, but then I would have been surprised by anything too. So I am surprised. I'd be surprised if the Golden State Warriors and Kuminga agree to that $7.9 million qualifying offer. Because if they both do that, I would take it as bad. This is bad. It's a bad situation. If he, you know, like the Giddey situation, I'd be excited if I were a Bulls fan. But there's no way to spin the qualifying offer positively to Warriors fans who have watched this kind of saga for 4 years.
I think that's why I'm surprised to hear that news from Monty Poole, because it means that the relationship is just all bad. I mean, it's just not good. And they have not found a way to find some sort of resolution. That's why, like, so when the Giddey news came out, was it yesterday, 2 days ago?
Yeah, yesterday.
So when you hit me with that on the air, I think that, to me, it's... Like, the Cam Thomas and Giddey situations are completely different than Kuminga's. And the reason why Giddey was able to sign a $4 for $100 deal, $100 million, is because they want to be together. I mean, like, Giddey wants to be with the Chicago Bulls, and the Bulls want Josh Giddey. They traded for him. They think he's going to be a part of their future. This clearly means that Kuminga is gone.
Right.
If he signs that qualifying offer, he is going to walk in free agency next summer, and the Warriors will have received nothing. If what Monty Poole is reporting is accurate, and I believe he is, he's tapped in more than just about anyone with the Warriors, then this is a lose-lose situation. The Warriors will not get anything in return for Jonathan Kuminga, and Jonathan Kuminga will have lost out at least for this year, on making, it sounds like, $20 million.
Yeah. It looks like he's walking away from 35. He's walking away from $35 million right now because he would make an extra 13 this year and then what he'd make next year. But if he has a great year, but how's he going to have a great year if he's still here?
But that's the difference between him and Cam Thomas.
Oh, okay. Go ahead. I was thinking you were going to say Giddy.
No. That's, again, like, both those situations are totally different. Even though Cam Thomas also signed the qualifying offer, he has a path to play. He's started for the Nets.
Right.
He's been a 24-point per game scorer for the Nets. He just didn't like what the offer was that they were giving him or presenting him. And so he's going to go make money in free agency next year, but he can, like, he's really on a prove it deal. We don't know what Jonathan Kuminga's prove it deal is going to look like because he doesn't determine how much he plays. I mean, Steve Kerr does not have to play him. I think he will because they're going to need him at some point, and guys are going to miss games, but day one of the season, he's the sixth man. He's not a starter for this team. And so it just says to me that, like, he really wants to get out of here, and he does not want to be a Golden State Warrior.
Yeah, and the reason that these dates, to me, are interesting, and I know sometimes people downplay this, but I do think the teams think it's important, and I actually think it's important, too. So if training camp starts the 29th, that means the Warriors will have their media day, you know, the 28th or 29th. And I'm starting to believe that no matter what happens, a decision will be given before the 28th or before that media day. You cannot. First of all, if there's no decision made, then Kuminga might not even be there, but Al Horford won't be available. Not that it's the end of the world, but Horford, Payton, and Melton won't be there because they won't be under contract. My bigger point is, are the Golden State Warriors really going to start training camp this year and Jonathan Kuminga walks in on a $7.9 million deal and more people are sitting at his table than Steph Curry's doing interviews because he's the big news? It's just not a good way to start the season.
Well, I remember the last time we had a player that came to camp without a contract. It was Klay Thompson.
Oh, right.
And that season for Klay Thompson was not enjoyable. He didn't look like he was having much fun that year. And behind the scenes, Klay Thompson was not the best version of himself because he was worried about his future and his contract. And I just, again, like, you know, we started the show talking about some of the things that happen off the field. Like with the Giants, there's kind of this, I don't know, like, unquantifiable effect that I believe that Drew Gilbert has had on that team. And I think the opposite could happen here, where the distraction that is going to be Jonathan Kuminga's future elsewhere and how the Warriors have sort of fumbled this situation, because they're at fault for this too. They chose not to trade him. They chose not to meet halfway in the middle, it sounds like. And basically, they just couldn't get anything done. Last offseason, this offseason, they couldn't make it happen. They couldn't keep a player happy that they said they wanted to keep. So if they lose him for nothing, that's kind of a disaster.
It's absolutely a disaster. And it's less about, to me, it's less about, do you think Kuminga's, are they losing a great player? I don't know. I think they're probably losing a pretty good player down the line. But to me, it's less about Kuminga than an asset. You had an asset 5 years ago, the number 7 pick in the draft. You took a player who you thought was going to be a part of your future, and now 5 years later, 4 years later, he's not on the team. Like, you usually, you make it up in some other area. If Jonathan Kuminga plays on the qualifying offer and isn't a member of the Warriors long term, then it's been mismanaged. Even if they didn't want to keep him, they went about it the worst possible way to try to move him by doing this.
Well, they, and I know, like, your guy talks about this all the time. You don't have to make a move until it's, or you don't make a move until you have to.
Yeah.
Well, clearly the time to make a move was before now, and they're realizing it, and it's too late. You know, if he signs that qualifying offer, I'm assuming it's because he's going to walk next summer, and you're going to get nothing for him. And it's just, it's another young player that you haven't been able to keep. It's another 22-year-old player that you have gotten nothing for. And it's just, it's tough because it feeds right into what everyone believes about the Warriors and some of their young talent, that they haven't been able to develop it. I think some of it's unfair, but at the same time, it's like you sign Jordan Poole, you trade him a year later, and you fail to come to terms with Jonathan Kuminga, and you haven't been able to keep him happy in the meantime. And so there is no compromise. I mean, it sounded like this whole summer it was either my deal or your deal, and neither side wanted to take the other.
Yeah, and the other thing about a team that may want Jonathan Kuminga is that team, if let's say the Warriors find a team that's interested in Kuminga that he's willing to go to, there's still a problem that the receiving team has, and that is he's going to be a free agent on their team next season. So they're going to have to be the ones to, you know, pay Kuminga what they need to keep him, but they're going to have competition. So there's no sure thing that if somebody's trading, you know, why would you trade for Kuminga at the deadline if you know he's going into free agency and everybody's going to have a shot at him, unless you get that nod, nod, wink, wink that, hey, you know, we'll take him here in Miami. Kuminga wants to go to Miami, and Miami's told Kuminga they'll pay him in the offseason. That's probably the way it would work, but then the Warriors get nothing for Kuminga.
Yeah, I just, like, it's crazy how it's gotten to this point. And we're, look, I mean, I guess maybe it's just the last sort of shot from Kuminga's camp that this is, you know, the card that he's going to play. I just don't see how it benefits either. You know, Kuminga loses out on some money in the immediate. Money that, again, you don't know if you're going to make. Like, if Kuminga could get hurt this year. Wait, what just happened to Juwan Jennings? Juwan Jennings, instead of taking, it sounded like the 3-for-45 deal that eventually was, you know, Colt McKivitz's, instead of taking stability, he chose to bet on himself and took an incentivized one-year deal to get a little more money, and week one he got hurt. And we don't know if he's going to be available, if it's a serious injury, if it's not, he could get hurt again. That might end up costing him in the long run. Like, I do respect that players are willing to go out there and put their bodies on the line for the chance to hit the jackpot, but I just don't know if it you might look back on it and say, why didn't I take the money?
Right. Right. And this from No. I don't think the Warriors will allow JK on the qualifying offer.
They don't have a choice.
They don't have a choice if he does not want to sign a long-term contract. And when I say long, I mean 2 years or more. If he doesn't want to sign a contract for more than 1 year because he doesn't want to be here, then why would he sign a three-year, $80 million contract if it locks him into the Bay Area where he doesn't want to be? So, like, Kuminga, in a way, he holds the cards right now because he can take that $45 million deal for 2 years, or he could take the 7.9. Those seem to be the only two options right now. 888-957-9570. And don't forget, training camp starting in less than 3 weeks. So this stuff's going to get up on the Warriors in a hurry. What's coming up next on the game is brought to you by Fremont Bank. Here for you, here for good. It was also sponsored by Moderna.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.